Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in and pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hey. Whoa. It's Saturday. What are we doing here?
Well, somebody's power kept going out because of an ice storm.
Yeah, otherwise known as hell freezing over. Wait, that doesn't make sense. No, hell didn't freeze over. There was an ice storm. I have two trees, one big one in the front, one big one in the back, and I was just really grateful that nothing big came off them and smashed anything important.
Right, because you're actually a homeowner now, so you can't just call a landlord and be like, dude, fix my stuff.
Well, it's funny.
Which is what Joel and I do.
Yeah, I used to do that. And then they'd say, what? No, you can do it yourself. It's easy, you know. But no, I think once I called a landlord to fix a light bulb, but it was like a fluorescent light, and I had no idea how to do it. So I felt stupid. It's like, I need help fixing a light bulb. But
don't use those like lightsabers.
No, I've seen 40-year-old virgin. It just doesn't work out. No, it's funny. I saw a picture on Twitter in town. Somebody said, it's like, oh, here's a picture of someone's car in the North End that got crushed by a tree. And I'm in the North End. And I look at the car and it's my car, like the same make and model. Oh. And I'm like, oh my God, what? And I ran outside. And it's like, what's going on? My car's fine. I came back in. I swear, once you buy a car, you see it everywhere, you know? I've seen it a lot around town, so yeah, totally threw me for a loop. But that has nothing to do with video games. It has to do with why we're recording, but
why we're on the wrong day.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry to everybody who was looking for us yesterday, but
yeah. Oops. That's my bad. I tried to control the
weather. We don't control the weather. Who knew?
I tried real hard too.
So, yeah, we did want to give a quick shout out to Lou, who does a whole bunch. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago. He does articles for us over at gamersinpodcast.com, and it was his birthday yesterday. So, happy birthday, Lou. I think 31, I think.
Oh, 31? You're supposed to. So, I don't know. Skype says it was 31. I'm sure he. I don't know if he's the type of person who doesn't want to say his age, but it's too late. Sorry, Lou. But happy birthday, Lou. I almost forgot.
Yes, and thank you very much for the box of PAX East goodies that I got. Here, this was in the box, and ooh. I started it this week.
Ooh.
It's Rift. I know Ryan can't actually see me.
No, I know what it is. We
say what it is, but yes, it's Rift.
But for our audio listeners, it's like, what is it? It's so exciting. It's Rift.
Very true. I started my first character, and it is pretty freaking awesome. I just did the first, like, two quests, but I'm playing a healer, and it's a really cool kind of idea, really nicely done game. I mean, obviously, I've done two quests, so I don't want to get too far into it, but yep. Look forward to that in the next couple days. I know it's, like, an older game. It's been out for, what, 2 years now, I think?
2 years? Yeah, it's not the newest. I think they just had an expansion come out.
They did, yeah. Storm Legion, I think, is the expansion. I think it came out about 3 months ago, so.
So, I remember playing it when it was in beta a little bit, and it's interesting. It's like a more realistic WoW, in a sense. Like, more realistic looking.
I really liked the art style and the direction that I've seen so far, and the cinematics in the world seem really cool. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to really diving into this. I mean, like, I need another MMO. I'm like, oh, I'm getting close to max level in WoW, so I guess I should find another one. It's not like I'm going to stop playing when I hit 90 in WoW, but...
What level are you in WoW? We haven't talked about WoW since everyone was like, no more WoW talk.
That's true.
So, I promise, guys, just a quick second.
Sure.
Because I'm curious.
I'm 82 now, almost 83. So what we've been doing is kind of playing through Lich King content, even though we way out-leveled it now. But we're just trying to stick with the story through Ice Crown. And then we're going to go try to find some people to do Arthas with us. And then we're going to move on. But with the amount of XP that we're gaining, and like I was saying to Ryan in the pre-show, they even give you XP for doing battle pets now, which really sucks. Because battle pets used to be the thing that I was doing so that I wouldn't get XP to kind of play WoW, but not out-level the people that I'm playing with, specifically Joel. And so now, I mean, I did one battle pet thing today just to test it, and I got 10,000 XP for one battle. And I was just like, okay, these things take like 2 minutes. I could level a character, and the XP actually scales depending on what your character level is. So I could just level up my panda probably in a day just battle petting. Like, it's which I know sounds kind of dirty, but
oh, battle really. Petting?
No. Battle petting sounds funny to me. Anyways.
So you're 83. You could basically skip over Cataclysm content.
I think we're going to skip Cataclysm. But the thing is, I was talking to a couple of people on Twitter about it, and they were saying that some of the best dungeons in the game actually happened in Cataclysm. So I think we might just skip Cataclysm questing content and just do dungeons until we get to 85 and go to Pandaria. Although, I'm pretty sure I'm only one or two levels away from the Warchief's Command to go to Pandaria. So, I mean, like, since Warchief's Command is at either 83 or 84, I can't remember, to go to Pandaria, we could conceivably skip Cataclysm completely, which is broken.
Well, not broken, just, we've discussed this before. Basically what Blizzard has done is they say, new expansion, just make it as easy as possible to get you and your alts to the new expansion. It doesn't really, it's almost like they need to have a newcomer switch that you can turn on just so it allows you to experience all the content without having to sort of, you know, do it with a reward.
Really, really enjoyed the Lich King content. I really liked Northrend and all of the models that are in-game, the environments, like Crystal Song Forest is beautiful. I think Storm Peaks is probably my favorite zone so far in any of the stuff that I've actually done in WoW. And I just felt like I didn't do any questing whatsoever in Storm Peaks other than there was the Mammoth Mount that I wanted. So I did some quests to get some rep with a faction in Storm Peaks. But in terms of straight story content, didn't do anything in Storm Peaks. We ran a couple of the dungeons, but like I say, we didn't actually experience Storm Peaks. And then Dragon Blight, we stopped the questing halfway through, which apparently there's a quest line in Dragon Blight that is one of the best quest lines in the game, and we just skipped it completely because we didn't actually go all the way through everything in that zone because we out-leveled it so quickly. So I wish there was a way to, I don't know, turn on half XP or something, you know, or, you know, even if there was some different color exclamation mark to be like, I am a main story point. You should probably do me.
Right. Yeah.
Color coding would be helpful.
Maybe there's a mod out there that you can use to kind of like a, you know, what are the good quests mod or something.
There are a lot of mods that are very much like how to level through a zone fast or, you know, like all that kind of stuff. But there doesn't seem to be like a mod out there. So come on, gamers in community, make me a mod.
I'm just
like, do not miss main storyline quests. That would be perfect. Is like, if you want to get the storyline of Zone X, make sure you do quests A, B, and C.
I'm waiting for someone in the chat room to say, that mod already exists. It's called wowwiki.com. It's like, oh.
Yeah, really. Yeah. But even then, I find it very difficult to find, like, quest lines. Like, even if they're organized into quest lines, it doesn't say, like, oh, well, this quest line will teach you about this person or this faction, or, you know, like, this is a main storyline that will set up the Arthas raid or, you know, whatever. That's what I feel is missing. So anyways, didn't want to get too far into WoW talk, but I managed to kill an entire day today just doing nothing in WoW. I was like sitting in guild chat and talking to them, and I was just kind of flying places. I did Darkmoon Fair and did a pet battle here and
so
tried to level
games.
Some fishing, which is so awful.
And you're fishing. You live in a fishing city. You could literally go out and fish, couldn't you? I suppose.
Yes.
You know, like, in your, at least in the real world, you could probably physically catch something to eat tonight.
Yep.
But in WoW, you're not doing anything.
Instead, we're going to have craft dinner.
Oh, well, yeah. Craft dinner. You know, craft dinner is good. It's no fish, but
yeah.
I had a WoW question, but I lost it. So
it's all that fishing talk.
Oh yeah. No, I just remembered you mentioned the dungeons and being awesome in Cataclysm, and that's how I leveled up. In August, I basically did Cataclysm over 3 days, just powered through it, and just did the looking for dungeon group or whatever.
Looking for group?
Yeah, looking for group. It's been so long. Looking for group, and you and Joel should just join as a party and just do those dungeons, because I did them multiple times. They're really good. They're all really good.
And I think that that's key, is that Joel and I need to do it once by ourselves to do the quests and get the story, and then we can do LFG and just kind of run through them. Because the problem that we find when we do LFG is always everybody just wants to go through as fast as possible, get all the loot for transmog or whatever, and then like they're not there to experience the dungeon at all. We like to stop, look around. We're the annoying ones in the group that are like, wait, guys, did you see the pretty curtains?
Wait, I want to get in front of this bad guy and get my picture taken.
Exactly. Screenshot.
That's all right. I understand that. But then that requires more effort. But I guess if you're an AIE, it's easy enough to just say, you know, out of the millions of 82s out there, who wants to run a dungeon?
Exactly. So yeah, it's pretty easy. But do you want to talk quickly about Dead Space before we jump right into Heart of the Swarm? Because that is what we are going to be mostly talking about today, is the awesome that is the Heart of the Swarm campaign. So, how's Dead Space 3? Dead Space 3, I'm pretty sure, is the game that I got for free from EA for the whole SimCity debacle. So...
yeah.
Worth playing, because I literally just went, well, this is the newest, so I'm getting the most for my money or whatever.
It's a great game, but unfortunately it's the third title in a series and you might be a little lost. Like, I'm not saying I'm not making fun of
you. Isn't it just zombies in space?
Not really. There is a story there.
How much is there to catch up on? Zombies, space, got it.
you could if you didn't want to play through the first two, you could probably go to IGN has this great series where they do, when a new game comes out, they do like, you know, Dead Space 1 and 2 in 5 minutes and explains everything that's going on. But Dead Space 1 and 2 are the better games in the series. Dead Space 3 is really good, but doesn't really live up to... the awesomeness that is 2 and the horror awesomeness. Not horror, the horror awesomeness
horror.
That is
1.
Horror, let me pronounce that. a lot of people were complaining that Dead Space 3 didn't really live up to them because it was really action-y, and adding the co-op kind of took away the whole spook factor. And one of the great things about the first two games is that your main character, Isaac Clarke, is crazy. He's insane, and he's having these visions that cause him to go, you know, see things that aren't really there. And you have these episodes where you'll go into this state of insanity, and there'll be monsters coming after you. And so you don't get that in this game. You're the most sane person on the planet that you're on. So it's weird. They've taken some of the things out of the game that a lot of people really liked, but they did add a weapon crafting system. Which is really well done.
Are you crafting from nothing, as in, like, you have to find mats, or are you upgrading existing weapons, like, in Mass Effect? I guess probably Mass Effect 1 would have been... Would that be kind of close?
No, it's all from mats, and you actually build the weapons, like... You can find parts for weapons. Each weapon consists of about 8 parts, which allows you to customize. So in the first game, in the first two games, you would have the plasma cutter or the line gun, or, you know, these are just weapons, right? In this one, you can certainly create the plasma cutter or the line gun. But the cool thing is that by using different parts, you can create a line gun that has a shotgun attachment underneath it, which is most powerful weapon in the game. You know, you can add modifiers to weapons, make them shoot acid, make them shoot electricity, and it just really mixes things up. And you can do that just from parts you find, or you can actually build the parts with mats that you get with the... I think we talked about a couple of months ago, the quickfire about the botting thing with Dead Space 3. Do you remember that?
Not even a little.
Yeah, well, there was these bots.
I was going to play along, but then I was just like, yeah, no, I don't know.
Well, it was like you have these bots and you put them down at resource places, and they'll collect mats for you to build parts and stuff. So it was really cool. You could build ammo and health items as well, so that really helps. But also just takes away from the survival aspect of it. You never really feel like... You're
running out of anything?
Exactly. So they've taken... That's what some people were kind of upset about. They kind of made the game stress-free.
I can see that. Well, I kind of felt that way in Bioshock, is that, like, there was ammo. It felt like there was ammo or there was gear modifiers. There was ammo all the time. And then there was like health and salt all the time because there was just food everywhere. So I was just like, I never felt like I was in any real peril in Bioshock either. And it kind of, it takes away from the enjoyment of the game. Like, you don't want it to be ridiculous where you're always out of ammo and you have nothing to do. Like, there's nothing you can do and you just keep dying. But at the same time, like,
I think
a little bit of scarcity.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just think they want that, but then if it comes back, they're like, it's just really hard to tune. And if you get a game that isn't perfectly like survival tuned, like, you might end up having a moment where you just can't beat the game because you're stuck. Yeah, it's your fault, but still, it's not very fun.
Yeah.
So they've kind of gotten rid of that problem. There's some co-op in there. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to try co-op, and I hear that's some of the most fun you can have because there are co-op only missions in the game.
Now, what platform are you playing on? Can we play together?
I'm on Xbox. So if you're on PC, then no, there's no cross play. But I have a few. I know Bob Fournier and Lou. Actually, speaking of Busy Zombie Lord, he has it as well. So we should probably get some co-op going. But I did really enjoy the game. It's very action-paced, and I found myself continuously just trying to go forward. And it is the third title in a series, so they take the story to a point where they sort of wrap it up. We had stories where they're saying Dead Space 4 was canceled, but I'm really hoping they do a Dead Space 4, because the way they kind of leave it, they leave it at the end, like a super, like, cliffhanger where you beat the end boss. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but there's an end boss. You beat it, and the credits play, and there's this cliffhanger. And it was a decent ending, and it's like, Dead Space 4, this is neat. I kind of want to see how they go with this. But seeing the ending, I knew they were going to have post-game DLC that was an epilogue, basically. So this gets into the whole debate of paying for the ending, paying for content that should have been in the game.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed the ending of Dead Space 3, and I was really happy that I was going to be able to play an epilogue. I don't mind giving a little extra money to a developer when they've earned it. So I popped the DLC in, $10. It's fairly short.
Wait, there's post-game DLC already?
Yeah, it came out a month after the game launched. Now keep in mind,
that's a little bit quick. Like, I mean,
It's not. We have this conversation every time. I like to say that they've gone on record saying that they started it when it went gold with another team. So the main team's working on other DLC, I think, or another game, while the side team that really doesn't have anything to do while the game is being finished starts work on this DLC.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, okay. I am a much bigger fan of DLC that comes after the end of a game, because then it doesn't feel like something that should have been added into the main game. I guess it just kind of depends how much content is in the DLC. Like, does it feel like it's something that should have been included, or does it feel like a new story? I guess
it's tough. It's not like.
I mean, obviously, it's going to be a continuation because it's an epilogue, but does it feel like a new, like a big enough chunk of information that it's standalone?
The great part about it is that it's introducing a new faction into the whole enemies. So in Dead Space 3, you have the Necromorphs. Okay,
so that's different then. That's enough. Yeah,
it has a twist. That sort of adds to the factions in the game, and there's new environments, I guess I should say. There really isn't, but they've kind of taken an old environment and redecorated
it. Retooled it, yeah.
Yeah, and they add to the story, and the new faction they add is basically the, I want to say Scientologists, but that's not right, because they're making fun of Scientology. Unitologists, I don't know. We'll say Scientologists. They're crazy, and they're cutting their own limbs off and replace and sewing on like necromorph limbs because they think that's going to get them to a higher ascendance or something.
All right.
So they're really crazy, and what the DLC brings back into the game is these horror insanity moments that I was talking about. So you actually get to go crazy again, and you're like shooting stuff, and you're talking to yourself and your co-op partner. who, even if you're not playing co-op, kind of pops into story moments, and he's like, who the hell are you talking to? And he'll slap you, and he's like, get it together, man. We got to survive. And really what you're trying to do is you're trying to get off the planet to go back to Earth because you need to warn them about the impending doom.
Right.
And like I said, I liked the ending of Dead Space 3 and how it sort of could lead into a Dead Space 4. Good cliffhanger. The ending for the DLC, stupid cliffhanger.
Stupid as in it made you angry that you have to wait, or stupid as in they should have just left it where it was?
I'm stupid because it was ridiculous. It's like,
oh,
how okay. do you, it's like you can't, I can't even fathom how you would do a 4 from it. Like, I don't want to spoil it because it is, like, the game has only been out a month, but the ending, it's just, it's like, how do you, it's like, I can't envision coming back from it, and also, your other ending was better, this one's just sort of ridiculous and dumb, and just, like, I was like, really? Oh, okay.
So just don't play the DLC then? Because the ending just ruins the other ending?
Well, see, the DLC was fine, and I just didn't...
They just don't do endings well, do they?
I know. Threes, I'm telling you. It's all about the threes this year. But no, the ending was just... I didn't really like it, but the DLC was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you could get... It'll go on sale at some point. But if you're going to play Dead Space 3, and you enjoy it, and you like the story... you owe it to yourself to pick up the Awakening DLC. And the story for those games are kind of ridiculous when you think about it. When you get right down to it, it's like, I guess you shouldn't really be surprised by the ending of the Awakening DLC. It just ramps up the stupid. I don't know.
All right. So, all in all, though, Dead Space 3 worth picking up for everyone out there?
If you played 1 and 2, you kind of... Yeah, I kind of have to.
You probably already have 3.
You probably already have 3 at this point, but if you have played the first 2 and you're wondering if you should pull the trigger on the third, EA has probably put it on sale, so you could probably
Yeah, I'm sure they probably have by now. So that brings us to the Heart of the Swarm campaign. So, spoilers if you have not played through the campaign of either Wings of Liberty or Heart of the Swarm. Spoilers, 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 spoilers! Because we're going to talk about all of it because I have now finished it. So, yay! Kerrigan, I love her.
Man, she's a roller coaster.
She is, like, I mean, I don't think, I can't remember another video game character that has had the shit kicked out of him or her so many times in so many different ways. Like, just absolute roller coaster for this woman. I feel so bad for her.
I'm going to lay it right out there and call me a sap if you want, but like this game just pulling on my heartstrings with this. So,
I teared up.
I didn't tear up.
Oh no.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just felt that like the whole Jim Kerrigan thing was just like, I felt for Jim, just like go through
that's
all
what
that
it
trouble.
Was. And it was when she rescues him from the compound.
The prison, yeah.
Yeah. And then she basically, like, she went through hell and high water to go rescue him. And, you know, like, she did all these things that you really, there's no coming back from. And he's just like, you're dead to me.
Well, it's like, I think the moment that I was all good with what Kerrigan was doing up until the point where she, you know, changed herself, like the whole motivation for the character was Jim's dead, so I have nothing to live for, so I'm just gonna ruin my life to fix the problems with the world. So without
we should probably just start at the beginning. So basically, at the end of Wings of Liberty, Kerrigan becomes human again because of the Zelnaga artifact. Strips out all of the Zerg, or most of the Zerg. Turns her back
sick
into
hair still.
Yeah, she still has the hair, which is what threw
that's
me.
That's where
way
she
off.
Gets her powers, Jocelyn.
Her hair.
Yeah, that's why I am not able to control the weather. My dreadlocks are in the other room.
They're somewhat lacking.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that was one of my favorite lines with when Jim and Kerrigan are first talking at the beginning, is he says something about having a little bit of salt and pepper in his hair and hoping that she still likes him. And she's like, yeah, well, I have a little more Zerg in mine. So it's just like, oh, Kerrigan.
Yeah, he just sticks his hand in her hair. Just all, oh, God, it's all goopy.
Yeah. So it's very... It's an interesting story. It's a very sad story. And so they basically have to try to escape the research facility where she's being kept because the fleet, the Dominion fleet, has found them and is basically destroying everything. So during the escape, Jim gets captured because he basically tells Kerrigan to get the hell out because that's who the Dominion is really after, right? Because she's been the Queen of Blades. She's been on this crazy rampage of revenge all through Wings of Liberty, leading the Zerg swarm against the Dominion. Well, and the Protoss, for that matter. Like, she's just basically become the leader of this destructive force.
Well, the Protoss are sort of, like, not even there.
Yeah,
they're kind of like on the sidelines, and I think that's cool because they're sort of like the older race, we'll say, and they're just like watching from the sidelines. But yeah, they're just sort of like not there, and they're there occasionally, I guess. It's weird.
Yeah, they kind of come in. I noticed them. They come in when there's a planet in question that impacts both the Terran and the Protoss. So they're like, there's a Terran colony on a planet, the Zerg is overtaking it, and the Protoss come in to say, like, okay, we're exterminating the Zerg, and that means all the Terran in the process. And that's where you have some of the you know, Terran versus Protoss type story points in Wings of Liberty. There really wasn't any Protoss in Heart of the Swarm, which I was kind of sad about because they're my favorite race, so there's that.
Yeah, you play Terran all the time.
I do play Terran all the time because in Wings of Liberty, that's who you play throughout the campaign, so that's the race I'm more comfortable with. But I did play a couple of Protoss matches just against the computer, and I think I played a couple of unranked ones too. They feel so OP to me. Like, Terran feels like so much work and so much management, and Protoss is just like... I don't want to say a win button because I know that they've done a really... You know, there definitely are people who play Zerg and who play Terran who win against Protoss, and I do understand that, but it just seems like if I can jump into a race having very little training in it and I can be winning matches where Terran, I mean, I have played so many matches as Terran, and it's just so hard to win all the time, no matter who else I'm facing. I just feel like there's something a little bit broken there. But anyways, that's multiplayer, so that's...
Yeah. The StarCast guys will tell you. Void Rays. Tech to Void Rays, and that's your win button.
Yeah, really.
They'll back me up. Probably not, but they, you know.
Yeah. So anyways, back to the campaign. So Jim gets captured, and then Kerrigan goes back to try to find him because he doesn't make it to the rendezvous point. So she goes back to try to find him, and then there is a Dominion announcement saying that Jim is dead. And it is absolutely heartbreaking. That is where I left the campaign, I think, last time when we talked about it on the show a few weeks ago. That is where I had to stop playing because I love Raynor. He's like, I'm totally in love with him. He's one of my favorite video games. Like, this, the whole StarCraft universe, the whole StarCraft story, some of these characters are just now my favorite characters of video games of all time. Like, they're so good. They're so well-rounded. Right. There's no character that is, like, it's very, very similar to Game of Thrones and George R. R. Martin's character development. Nobody is really all good or all bad, you know? Right. They're varying shades of gray, and I really, really like that. So,
now did you believe that he was dead?
No.
Okay.
It was one of those pull at your heartstrings moments where you get this announcement saying that Jim is dead, and you're kind of like, oh my God, that Blizzard cannot have just done this to me. But at the same time, you realize that Wings of Liberty is over. Heart of the Swarm is all about Kerrigan and the Zerg, and then Legacy of the Void is going to be all about the Protoss. So, really, Kerrigan could take down the Dominion, and Jim really doesn't have to have a part to play anymore, really. I mean, they could have conceivably killed him off, and it would have been horrible and heart-wrenching, but he didn't really have a story to drive anymore. They could have done it. So, I mean, there was that little nagging doubt, but at the same time, I'm just like, no, there is no way that they killed my Jim. No.
So, did they ever explain Menk's reasoning for keeping him alive? Like, did he want that as a trump card to kind of control Kerrigan down the road? Or?
I think that that was the idea. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you had, in the end, he basically said, as she was coming closer and closer to Korhal, he basically sent her a hologram message saying, like, the closer you get, the closer Jim comes to death. Because, like, by the time she hacks into the system and learns that he's still alive, Manx knows that she knows and says, well, you know what? If you come after me, I'm just going to kill him. So I think that that was probably the reasoning, but I don't really know. It was never explicitly explained, which is also something I really like about the StarCraft franchise, is they give you the tools that you need to figure things out, right, but they don't necessarily say, like, hit you over the head with it, you know?
Well, I mean, they didn't need to kill him. He probably would have served him better to be alive, but saying that he was dead worked well for not only propaganda, because he was labeled as a renegade, but also to just piss Kerrigan off.
Yeah, in hindsight, really, not a good idea.
Yeah, probably. It drove her to make some questionable decisions and basically give up her humanity.
So sad when she went back to being, like, full-on Zerg Queen of Blades character. I mean, I love that she's this strong leader female character, but at the same time, I'm just like, oh man, like, Zerg is my least favorite race, so having to play through the campaign as Zerg was, like, definitely just not something I really enjoyed. I really loved the story and all of the cutscenes and everything that had to do with her and the conversations that she had with the characters on her ship. Mm-hmm. All of that was really, really interesting. I just didn't enjoy the actual gameplay of playing Zerg.
Oh, that's too bad. I think there's a reason I'm actually playing Zerg right now in multiplayer, is because I found that I actually really enjoyed playing them. But that's the problem with...
I do like that everything comes from the one building, that you can make every single unit from your hatchery. That is, as a Terran, where normally I'm trying to manage a bazillion different kinds of buildings and all their different tech labs and reactors and stuff, the fact that you can make everything from one location is awesome.
Yeah, you know, that is one of the big perks, basically. I can just hotkey one building to build my units, but... I found that that's the issue with doing three games, one for each race, is that usually you give multiple races because not everybody wants to play all the races. They just want to focus on one or possibly two, right? So they kind of lose certain people, like you're saying. You didn't enjoy playing the Zerg, but I did want to say, though, do you think they can't do this, they shouldn't, but do you think they'll have, like, the trope item where use this magic item to turn her into a human again? Bong, you know, they can't do that again.
I don't know. I don't think that they will. They kind of, at the end, because Jim, basically, you rescue him. He goes back. He's on the ship with Matt and Prince Valerian. Almost forgot his name, but Menx's little dude. So he's on the ship there, and he basically says, I don't want to talk to you, you're dead to me, blah, 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 blah. And then you get to the final missions on Korhal, you're leading the advance against Menx and his forces, and then Jim comes, I really, really like this, because Jim doesn't come to the rescue, but he's, like, your backup, you know? And it just, again, heartstrings. Like, you're just like, oh, Jim, I knew you'd come around.
Well, you know, it's like that old saying. It's like, if you love something, you gotta let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So he let it go, and he'll probably go after that Russian chick with the eye patch. Probably not.
But yeah, they do, after there's the confrontation, which was unbelievable. The confrontation between Menx and her and Jim at the end of Heart of the Swarm was just...
It was good.
Unbelievable. Like, it was so, so good. And at the end of that, she kills Manx, and she just kind of flies away to be with her swarm. And, you know, there's just some really iconic lines from her and from Jim, and they tied up that whole relationship story in a satisfying way that still made me sad, because, you know, I like the fairy tale ending, the, you know, like the guy gets the girl, or the girl gets the guy, or the girl gets a girl, or whatever, you know, like, no judgments.
I'm a sap. I'm the same way. I was like, you know, I kind of want the happy, you know, like, ah, you know. And there was a couple moments in the beginning of Heart of the Swarm where they were,
you kind of get that
fixed. Starting to get comfortable with each other, and it's just it's unfortunate, but they have to totally save the world, Jocelyn.
I know they have to save the world, and you have to make some sacrifices to save the world. And the chat room right now is giving us some. I don't know, predictions for Legacy of the Void, saying that what they think is going to happen to Kerrigan. And I think there's some seriously good predictions in there. I mean, you kind of, it could go either way. I'm hoping for the second one. The two predictions that are sitting in the chat room right now are that she will die in the final battle against Aemon, who is the god-type character who created the Zerg.
And
the hybrids.
Well, I think the hybrids are something made by the humans.
Yes, it was kind of confusing, because the hybrids show up, and they are hybrids between Zerg and Protoss, and they show up in Wings of Liberty, and then they show up again. He evolved Zerg.
Well, the Zerg existed as a So I think personally, they'll sacrifice Kerrigan. To save the world and ending Aemon,
because they have stated that through the campaign of both Wings of Liberty and Heart of the Swarm, they state multiple times that Kerrigan is the only way to save the universe. And so I think that you guys are probably right. I think she will probably die in the final battle. That kind of makes me sad, because the second prediction that's sitting in the chat room is that when Aemon dies, because he was the creator of the Zerg will disappear, and Kerrigan, therefore, will lose all of her Zergy bits and become human again, and then she and Jim will just go fall in love again and get married and have lots of sex and babies.
I really think... Yeah, with either of those endings, I really do think that Kerrigan will, you know, it'll be like we end Aemon, that means the Zerg disappears, meaning Kerrigan will fade away, and there'll be this, you know, goodbye scene that we'll get. Very tragic, very sad, but...
That she's going to die either way, whether it's that she's going to die in the battle or...
It's a redemption story.
Think that she's going to die either way?
Yeah, because it's a redemption story. I think Blizzard's really going to take advantage of this to just... hit it home and do some story awesomeness, and, you know,
she kind of can't come back from, like, there's almost no forgiving her.
Yeah, she's done some bad
the
stuff.
Millions of people that she killed during her kind of revenge.
Well, not just in the revenge, when she was the Queen of Blades, you know.
That was totally fueled by revenge and hatred as well, because she was so pissed at everyone at the Terran for leaving her behind on the planet, right? So I can't remember what planet that happened on, but
Planet X. You know, the one behind the moon of Jupiter?
So that was fueled by anger and revenge against the entire Terran race. I mean, so she killed millions of people. So
yeah. So
there's really no coming back from that. And I'm going to use a non-video game example, but it's very similar to Angel in Buffy and all of the destruction that he caused. And one of the reasons that they did some of the scenes where he killed people the way that they did with his vampire face on is because they knew that if he did it with his regular angel face instead of his vampire face, then there would be no redemption. There would be no, like, the viewers would not want to see him with Buffy ever again, or, you know, in any kind of good role ever again, because of all the evil stuff that you just can't get past. And Kerrigan is a very similar character in that she's now doing things for the right reasons. She's trying to save the universe after having her big evil revenge campaign. But at the same time, it's like, that's not really forgivable. So it's a really, really interesting character. It was a fantastic campaign, even though you have to play as Zerg through the whole thing.
Well, you get Protoss next. Stop your complaining.
I know. I am. Oh, I'm going to love it so much because I'm really, really, really looking forward to playing Protoss and seeing how this whole entire story ends is just going to be really interesting. I mean, I've been so impressed because my Blizzard experience has been playing through WoW and then playing Diablo 3 because I didn't actually play Diablo 1 and 2. So playing Diablo 3 and playing WoW in the past, Blizzard storytelling, I gotta say, not that hot. But StarCraft? Holy crap. Like,
right.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. And for Legacy of the Void, like, I think we're going to be, your main character will be Zeratul, like the Protoss you kind of see pop up in Wings of Liberty in this one. And you'll kind of see Kerrigan and Jim sort of show up as similar ways as Jim has shown up with his ship in the second one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of side characters that show up in certain missions and obviously the final mission because, yeah, it'll be interesting. And I think there'll be a heavy focus on the Protoss, but you will have Kerrigan and the Swarm and Jim there in the background as well. So
yeah. So now, what did you think about the actual length of the campaign? Because I found it, having completed Wings of Liberty so recently, I found it extremely short. I mean, you still had a good 20-something missions. Mm-hmm. Can't remember how many. I feel like it was 27, but I could be wrong. But in Wings of Liberty, you had like 27 main storyline missions, plus you had a whole bunch of side missions for each of the characters on your ship. So I found it extremely short, and I do know that it's an expansion, but I found even the missions within the campaign didn't take me nearly as long. And I mean, again, it might just be the difference between playing as Zerg and playing as Terran, and Terran missions just by the nature of playing Terran take a long time. I don't know, but I found that I was spending probably 20 minutes, 25 minutes on each level in the campaign for Heart of the Swarm, and it went by really, really quickly, which I was happy about because I wanted to know what happened to Jim, but at the same time,
I think the value is there if that's what we're going for.
Oh, definitely.
Here, but,
well, I mean, the value is there if even without the campaign. If it was strictly a multiplayer title, like I have played the crap out of multiplayer in the last like month. Mm. The amount of time that I've sunk into multiplayer more than makes up for any shortcomings in the campaign. And again, I'm not saying that the campaign had shortcomings because the story was so good.
Right.
But I found that a lot of the levels went by very quickly.
I think
I'm just getting awesome at it, so.
Well, I was just going to say, I think you can say it's kind of disappointing it's short because there really wasn't a lot of, you know, they told the story they wanted to, but you really, it was like 2.5 years since the last one. You just want more story, right? Because you're not getting a conclusion. That's the problem. Yeah. When a new game comes out,
Although, I mean, you do kind of...
But I mean, there's still the overarching issue.
Somewhat of a conclusion. Because, I mean, you get the same sort of conclusion in Heart of the Swarm that you get in Wings of Liberty. Because in Wings of Liberty, you get the you saved Kerrigan conclusion. Yeah. In this one, you get the you kill Manx conclusion. So, I mean, it does wrap up the kind of story. The overarching story, really, of the first two, Wings of Liberty and Heart of the Swarm, has been the awful Dominion leader, right? And so that's over now. Now you can go and, you know, in the third installment, you're going to save the universe. And so, I mean, you do get two kind of endings. You get the ending of your Jim and Kerrigan story for all intents and purposes, and you also get the end of this big overarching Dominion, dictatorship.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I was sort of thinking about it. I was going to use Mass Effect as an example, but you kind of get the same thing. You know, there's still that overarching issue, the Reapers, throughout the first three games, and then the conclusion doesn't come to the final one, so I proved my point wrong in my head. But I think it's just, when it really comes down to it, we want more StarCraft story, because it is so good, and we know we're going to have to wait for it. So I think that's why we're like, I wish it was a little longer, but I don't know where you add story to it.
Oh, no. I mean, again, it would have been maybe side missions and the chat room's pointing out the evolution missions. Really, really short. Almost don't even need to be in there. Like, I mean, they could have almost done it just as...
try this unit. You know, it's a creative way to get you to try the unit, right? Without just plopping you in with a bunch of them and saying, kill this dude over there.
Yeah, it's basically the same as the where you go to the lab in Wings of Liberty and they just show you that little like 30-second clip of the new ability that has come that you have to choose between. It's the exact same thing, except for they actually throw you in and let you actually try the unit instead of relying on a little cinematic, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was kind of like almost a waste, I guess. Like, they were really, really short, and I kind of wish that it had been a full-on mission where you got to use that unit instead of just, like, it was an auto-win button. There was no, like, you couldn't lose those missions, because even if you played it really, really poorly with no strategy and just threw all your units in there, then they just give you more of those units. Because I did that one in the Ultralisk evolution mission, is I just kind of, like, threw them ahead with no thought or planning, and then I lost most of them. I think I had two left, and they were just like, oh, we have evolved more of those fancy Ultralisks that you're testing out. What do you know? Here.
The guy's just like, please try not to fail again.
Try honestly. Not to kill all these. Okay,
you're the
bye.
Queen of blades.
Step it up.
Stop a sucking. I don't know why he wasn't Italian.
I don't know what he was, but he was a really interesting model.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of the voice acting, I think that's the greatest part about just switching it up to the Zerg, is that you get to have a whole new set of voice acting. Like, Kerrigan still, like, has that human voice, but the rest are sort of, like, I don't know, like, primal-like. I don't know. It's weird. It's hard to explain, but they're just, they're very direct and binary, you know, talk, as opposed to showing emotion.
But yeah, so I think that pretty much does it for our Heart of the Swarm campaign talk. Is there anything else that you want to talk about in terms of Heart of the Swarm or StarCraft? I have a couple of comments to make about the latter, but...
Man, we played last night when the power started to stabilize, and I told you the story about my friend who we were playing latter, and the placement matches are just so brutal. Because I was like, oh, I really want to play with you, so we'll start doing some ladder. And this is his first time playing, and you play against, like, a diamond. You play against a gold, because you're trying to place, right? And he's just like, man, we keep losing and getting our ass kicked. I'm trying to explain to him why you should surrender right away, just so you can get to the new match. But it was really disheartening.
It is. I find, because, I mean, Joel and I play on a 2v2 team, and we placed probably a week after Heart of the Swarm came out. Like, we basically got our copies of Heart of the Swarm and did our placement matches for 2v2 right away because we really enjoy playing as a team.
Yep.
And so we had the exact same experience in that you play 2v2 and the way that the placement matches work is they place you against, like, you know, a diamond, a gold, a silver, a bronze to see how you do. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But then the problem is that when you go into the ladder and you're placed in the ladder, I think we're high bronze now. I think we're like 12 or something. And we're actually in the same ladder as you and your 2v2 team, which is really, really random and funny.
Mm.
But
wait, how do you know that?
Because if you look at the ladder, there's Arm the Nuke, which is you.
That is me.
Yep. So anyways, what then happens is every single time that you create a new 2v2 team, so if you and I want to start playing, we have to do placement matches. And it doesn't take into account the fact that I am a bronze 2v2 player and you are a, let's call you a gold 2v2 player. It just throws us into placement matches. So what ends up happening is that Joel and I, whenever we go to play a ranked game, we are ending up in these matches that are other people's placement matches, but they may be, like, we've played almost all of our matches in the ladder against people who are platinum, diamond, and master players at the 2v2 level. Huh. The team that they are in is unranked, but they are playing on other teams that are ranked at these high levels. So we actually have not come up against, we've played almost 50 matches since Heart of the Swarm came out, and we have not gone up against another bronze level team yet. It's ridiculous.
That's weird. I would think placement matches, that doesn't make sense.
Huh. Like, we actually haven't found another ranked team to go up against. Right. Everyone that we're playing against is not ranked as a 2v2 team.
How do you know they're not ranked?
Well, you can go in and you can look at it in there. You can look at people's profiles after matches, which I do every single time. Exactly.
just and a, it's,
It's really, really frustrating. 1v1 is not broken. 1v1 is fine, because that a lot of people have as their kind of sacred, you know, how am I as a StarCraft 2 player?
I can't do 1v1.
So, I love
1v1. It's too stressful.
I love it. I love it.
Why do you love it? Explain to me why you love it.
Because it doesn't have the problems of 2v2. I'm a very competitive person, so I really enjoy the competitive multiplayer part of StarCraft. So I really like 1v1 because it puts me up against people that are at my skill level. The problem, as soon as you get into any kind of team, whether it's 2v2, 3v3, or, oh my god, first 4v4 last night, what a complete and total crazy shit show that was.
You have to be careful. Yeah, 4v4 is like, don't expect anything high, because it's like, it takes, it's such a teeter-totter that can so go one way if someone just techs or someone just rushes. Yeah,
it was just ridiculous. Just the sheer number of units in 4v4 is just ridiculous. But anyway, so 1v1...
slowing the game down.
Yeah, really. But the 1v1 ladder doesn't really have those problems. I think a lot of people take it seriously, so you don't get a lot of the kind of rushy, cheesy stuff that you get in 2v2. And I feel like... I don't understand why they don't take your ranking with other players into account. Like, if I'm ranked at the platinum level in 2v2, I should not start my placement matches against bronze people. You know, like, if I'm ranked with anyone at that level, I should be starting all of my matches up at that level and working my way down, as opposed to, it seems like everybody plays bronze, and then if you beat the bronze, then you go to silver, and if you beat the silver, then you go, you know, it's building up instead of going down. I would rather, as a bronze player, play one match against a platinum player and then be like, okay, I'm clearly not at that level, so bump me down, as opposed to being a bronze player and having every single match I play against platinum level people. It's just, it's not fun. And it really sucks because, like I said, 2v2 is how Joel and I usually play StarCraft, and it's just so broken that it doesn't make it fun anymore. You know, at first we were like, well, everyone is going to place with their 2v2 team, and then we'll start playing more people that are our level, and it'll be fine. But it hasn't worked out that way. And Heart of the Swarm has been out for how many weeks now? 4 weeks? Five weeks?
A month.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's because it's the switching teams thing and the switching out of partners that then you have to re-rank your team, which is where all of these crazy placement matches are coming from. So I really think that it's kind of broken, and they need to take a look at how that works. So
I mean, the ladder has always been a thing that I'm not really a fan. Like, competitive multiplayer, like playing against, not really being able to control who I'm playing against can sometimes suck. But like, that's where, you know, just playing with your friends and comp stomps. That's the most fun I have. Even when we're playing, we played a 2v2 match, and you and Matt kicked our butts. Joel and I didn't see it coming.
That was awesome. That made me really feel good. So happy, because we weren't even talking to each other. It was so awesome because, like, well, the four of us were all on Skype.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, Matt and I weren't even talking to each other. We weren't even like typing in the chat or anything. And I could hear, because we were on Skype, so it's always on, right? So I could hear like people typing away. And I can always tell when Joel is like spamming or if he's actually typing out a message. I think we know each other too well. But anyways, I can always tell what he's doing. And so I could tell that you guys are strategizing and stuff, and Matt and I were doing nothing. It was just like, I saw what he was building, so then I started building complimentary stuff, and it was just like we had this total, like, mind meld thing going on. Yep, and then we kicked ass. It was awesome.
That's the most fun I have playing that game. And when we finished those matches and I went to do ladder play, I was just like, get through these five matches, and then ladder play will be fine. And it's just really, it's just not fun for me. And I know there are people out there screaming at us, and we are on the AVE Move Network, and probably most of their audience is just like, you guys, go play Halo, you know? It's like, you know?
No, I totally get it. Like, I mean, I'm a bronze or silver level player, and I'm okay with that, and I'm still learning, because I only just started playing StarCraft at, you know, January, because I got it as a Christmas present. So, and the chat room's telling us to play unranked. I do play unranked matches as well. I just, because I really like to be ranked. I like to have a number, okay? I get really, really stressed if I don't have a rank.
Well, I think I think unranked, you just don't you don't get bronze, silver, gold, but you still get experience towards your your Zerg or Protoss or Terran level. So I guess there's that. And he says to train at the very least. And I did try the AI training, the three stages. It kind of walks you through the build, and especially with Zerg, it kind of got me into the, you know, the movements of, okay, time to expand, time to build a second hatchery to build units, time to, you know, build more overlords, and just gets you, you know, looking at different things, right, to build stuff. And it's a complex game. And if you're not paying attention to all the layers, your enemies can roll you over.
Yeah, take advantage of that for sure. So, yeah, like I said, we have been playing unranked, and it's just like, I really enjoy the competitive nature of the ladder, and I just wish that it was a little bit different in the 2v2, like in the team stuff. I wish that it was a little bit different. But like I said, I'm playing 1v1 ladder, and I really like the 1v1 ladder, even though I'm still right at the bottom. I'm totally cool with that. Like, I think I've gotten up to my high bronze now in 1v1, and I'm sure that I'll, you know, as I'm getting better and as I'm playing all the unranked stuff and the 2v2 and more of the campaign, I'm getting a better handle on what StarCraft is and how to play better. I watch Husky like it's nobody's business, and I just, like, I feel like I'm really improving as a player, and I'm sure that I will be going up and up and up in the 1v1, but yeah, I just feel like it's so difficult to enjoy team play on the ladder, and I feel that it's a little bit broken just because of all the placement. So it would be nice if they took a look at that and maybe flipped it on its head instead of starting everybody at bronze, maybe starting everybody at platinum would be a better way to go. But
yeah, I think the ladder will improve over time as it sort of shakes things out. But then I guess they reset the ladder every 3-4 months.
I can't remember how often it is, but yeah, there's seasons. I think there 4 seasons a year. So
I think the next season starts the 1st of May.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
2.5 months?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, we should move on because we're running out of time again.
Yeah, we should just talk about games.
Yeah, we should. Forget topics. No one wants to hear our opinions on
stuff. LucasArts shut down.
Yeah, nobody even cares about that anymore. That was so last week.
3 weeks ago, actually.
Yeah, really. So, first of all, I just wanted to let everybody know that Ryan and I really do appreciate your continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. Use the code TheGamersIn to double your RAM when you purchase a new gaming rig. 4 becomes 8, 8 becomes 16, but 16 does not become 32, because that would be insane. Head on over to DoghouseSystems.com and get your order on. Which brings us to Quickfire News!
Adam Orth is no longer with Microsoft. Last week, we talked about an executive at Microsoft that went on a rant over Twitter about always-on consoles and how you should hashtag deal with it. Well, news out this week is reporting that Adam no longer works for the company. No word on whether he resigned or was forced to leave, but just goes to show, be careful what you say about your job over social networks. Also sucks that Microsoft had to delay their next Xbox unveiling by a month to reprint banners that were using their old hashtag deal with it slogan.
EA announces a Mac port of SimCity. The announcement came this week that SimCity will be available June 11th on the Mac. Players will be able to play with their friends regardless of the platform, which is good news. This news comes at the same time as the return of Cheetah Speed, which is the fastest simulation speed in the game. Cheetah Speed was disabled last month to help decrease the server issues. Players have done their part, too, to decrease server stress as well by not playing. It will be interesting to see how well the title sells in June.
So you're not playing?
No.
I haven't gone back yet either.
I have to play this weekend. I think I'm probably going to play tomorrow because I have to get part 2 of my review up on the Doghouse site. But yeah, I am not playing. It's not a very good game. Part 2 of the review. It's not good. Mm. End.
We should talk about that next week. We should. Yeah. Arkham prequel out this October. People have been wondering what Rocksteady has been up to since releasing Arkham City. And with the announcement of Arkham Origins... we still don't know. Origins is being developed over at Warner Brothers Montreal using the same modified Unreal Engine that Rocksteady used for the first two games. Batman Arkham Origins will launch on Xbox 360, PS3, Wii U, and PC on October 25th. No mention of next-gen consoles. Also on the same date, Batman Arkham Origins Blackgate, being developed by Armature Studios, will release on Vita and 3DS. Could the WB be saving Rocksteady for Batman's next-gen outing, or are they working on something completely new? Who knows?
Zynga is being sued over stock sales. A former product manager at Zynga is suing the company over allegations that Zynga barred non-executives from selling their stock following the IPO in 2011, while allowing management to cash out. Early sales allegedly allowed executives to cash in, nearly doubling their proceeds, while non-executives were forced to sell later, when stock prices had dipped over 49%. The plaintiff, Wendy Lee, said she personally lost almost $20,000 and is calling for the court to order those who sold early to pay damages to those who were forced to wait. I am not an expert on stocks or the American legal system, but this sounds funny to me. Are companies actually allowed to tell people when to buy and sell their stocks? If anyone can shed some light on this, please email the show at info@gamersandpodcast.com because I'm actually really curious about this situation.
Me too. I don't understand stocks either. Legend of Zelda reimagined with role reversal, which makes Jocelyn very mad. Cue mad face. Through a series of illustrations inspired by Anita Sarkeesian's Video Game Tropes versus Women series, artist Aaron Diaz has reimagined the Zelda universe with Zelda as the hero rescuing a princely Link. Set 2,000 years after Twilight Princess, the concept is titled The Legend of Zelda Clockwork's Empire. Diaz wrote he is a very big Zelda fan and worked hard to draw from key elements in the continuity and mythos. I think playing a Zelda in a video game would work, possibly focusing on the Zelda / Sheik stuff in Ocarina, or being a pirate in Wind Waker. Anyways, detailed illustrations and information about the project can be found on Diaz's Tumblr.
Rumor! Microsoft announcement is coming 3 weeks before E3. The Verge is reporting that the Microsoft event, originally planned for April 24th, has been bumped back to May 21st, according to inside sources. The event will be small, focusing on details of the next-gen Xbox, codenamed Durango. The May 21st date falls just 3 weeks before E3 this year, which makes it an interesting choice for Microsoft to insist on having an Xbox-specific event instead of holding off a couple of extra weeks. This is still only a rumor, but we will keep you guys up to date and cover all the Xbox details when they come out later this spring.
Nintendo is shutting down a few Wii internet services. At the end of June, Nintendo will be gutting most of the Wii's internet services. The cuts include the Nintendo Channel, the Forecast Channel, which was weather, the News Channel, the Everybody Votes Channel, and the Mii Contest Channel. All sounds very useful so far. Nintendo will also be severely limiting data exchange with Wii friends, which includes exchanging messages on the Wii message board, exchanging Miis on the Mii Channel, and data exchange within certain games. Let's be honest, though, you probably never used these features, and if you brought a brand new Wii Mini, well, it never supported online play to begin with.
Blizzard buys IGN Pro League. On Monday, Blizzard announced it had purchased all technology and assets from IGN's Pro League, as well as hired 23 members of the IPL staff. Blizzard will not be continuing any of IPL's projects, but will be putting the staff to work on Blizzard's own esports projects instead. They will be split between creating web and mobile content, the Blizzard esport team, and finally the team responsible for the revamped World Championship for StarCraft II.
Crazy.
Hooray! Which brings us to our topic of the week. This week we are talking about Disney closing LucasArts and moving to a licensing model. So we were going to cover this a couple weeks ago, but then we ended up talking PAX East, and then we ended up talking BioShock spoilers that took way too long. So we know we're a little bit behind on this, but also the closing of a studio seems to be happening a lot lately. So yeah. We've seen a lot of layoffs in the industry, and we really didn't just want to let this fall by the wayside. So, Ryan, why don't you take this away? Because I'm not all that familiar with LucasArts and what they've done outside of SWTOR, obviously. Right.
I think the big and the funny thing you mentioned, SWTOR, is that is not even developed by LucasArts. That is, in essence, a licensing deal, because BioWare licensed the Star Wars license to build SWTOR. So that's sort of what Disney is doing with LucasArts, is they're converting them from a developer, which I believe one of the last games they put out would have been the Star Wars Kinect game, which was awful.
Oh, right.
And then probably a better example would have been The Force Unleashed and The Force Unleashed 2, which were like the core Star Wars games that they were making. But yeah, by shutting them down, and the crazy thing about this news story is that Disney has money, and so does LucasArts, to support this venture and make it great. And we saw that with Star Wars 1313 that was supposedly going to be coming out in the next couple of years. But I guess they just didn't see the point in it. They saw more money in just licensing the IP out than building it in-house.
Well, I mean, really, I have no idea the kind of money that we're talking about here, but, I mean, Star Wars is one of the most iconic franchises, especially in the kind of people that play video games. You know, sure. Like, I don't mean to stereotype in any way, but being a person who plays video games, I'm a huge nerd. I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
Venn diagram.
Exactly.
Star Wars video games. There's like a sliver of... It's probably overlap when you think about it, because Star Wars is that big.
Exactly. Star Wars is huge. There's a whole lot to pull from between, you know, there's books, there's comics, there's cartoons, there's movies. There's just so much there that you can make into video games. And they... It almost seems like an auto win button to make a Star Wars video game. It should sell huge amounts. It should do really, really well. So, I mean, the fact that they haven't done that well with all of their projects, I feel like it's probably a good idea to just license stuff out because, I mean, God, the money they would make on licensing, I assume that there's got to be a base fee that you pay to use the Star Wars IP, and then there's probably a percentage that they get of all sales.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, and the thing is, they don't have to do anything. All they have to do is let somebody else use their property.
Well, they just...
Oh my God.
They're converting to... Like, they let go all their developers, probably, and they're just converting to managing the IP.
I'm sorry. I just had to read this out of the chat room. Do you play video games? Do you watch Star Wars? Then do we have a deal for you?
If anything, no, we don't have a deal for you.
Yeah, really.
But it's the same person, Elazarus, in the chat room, mentions non-Star Wars games like Grim Fandango and Sam & Max. And I believe the Sam & Max titles have also converted to a licensing deal because they were being made by Telltale. Telltale Games, the guys who did The Walking Dead, and yeah. If anything, this will shed more light. Like if say Double Fine wants to make another Grim Fandango game because they are connected, the guy Tim Schafer worked at LucasArts at a time, and if they wanted to make a new Grim Fandango game, they could license the IP from Disney, you know, because they ain't interested in doing anything with it. They would love to get free money, you know? So
who doesn't like free money?
Yeah, I still think that they just it's a move that makes sense, but considering all the money that has exchanged hands with Disney and Lucasfilms, it's sort of like one of those scenarios where it's easy to say, it's like, well, they have a lot of money, why would they need to do this and put these people at all these jobs? But if it doesn't
make sense for them business-wise, yeah, then
it's that catch 22. It sucks, and they can. It's like Blizzard firing like 100 people from. I think there was a customer service stuff they let go, and people were like, "Well, you can afford to keep these people. Why would you let them go?" It's like, well, business.
We don't need these people.
We don't need
yeah.
them. We're not a charity. We're not here to just give people jobs, right? So. There's that, you know,
it makes total business sense. They don't have to put anything in because the Star Wars IP is already there, is already doing the work for them. So if they don't need to put money in to pay developers, if they can just make money by licensing it out to other people, that makes perfect business sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can totally see why they did this, but it does kind of suck because I did watch all of the promo stuff for 1313 and
that
looked
game...
like it was... It had some serious potential, and I hope somebody picks it up, but they probably won't. But I was reading the news article that you had posted in the notes here, Ryan, and it just made me laugh because it's like, well, they were making 1313, and then George Lucas came in and said, let's make it about Boba Fett. And I was like, damn it, George Lucas, stop ruining my Star Wars.
I think we should just, you know, put turtlenecks
Stop
on all the
you're
people.
Stop doing and tell, just do what I say. And it's like, no, George, no.
Well, see, that's the best part about him not being involved in any of this stuff anymore.
Yeah,
is
that's
that,
the thing.
And with the licensing deals, that maybe the licensing deals will be less strict. And it'll just be like, you get to use Star Wars, we're not going to be overshadowing you.
We promise that we will keep George out of your business.
George is retired. We have locked him up in Hawaii at a resort. You know, like, it could be good in the long term for the Star Wars franchise, but it sucks to see such a... The studio's been around for 30 years, and it's not just Star Wars. Like, there's games like we mentioned before, but also Jim on Twitter, I think Jim Bean, he said... He was talking about Zombies Ate My Neighbors, And I remember playing that game with my brothers, and I did not. I had no idea it was a LucasArts game. And it's crazy the amount of games they put out that aren't Star Wars or mm-hmm. Indiana Jones, for that matter.
Which I still looked at the list of games, and mm-hmm. I actually hadn't played any of them except for Sword War.
Yeah, and I mean their good games were sort of back in the day, like the Super NES yeah. days and the PC stuff, but. Yeah, I'm looking forward to see the first thing to come out of this. And 1313 may not get saved, but I really kind of hope it does.
So there's also Star Wars First Assault is another one of the ones that were canceled. Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk about that quickly before we wrap up the show?
Sure, yeah. It was supposed to be like a downloadable title to kind of revive the Battlefront franchise. And... it could also be one of the reasons why Disney made this decision, because Battlefront 3 was sort of had a troubled development, and you know the people who were making it were blaming LucasArts, and LucasArts was blaming the people that were making it, and it was just a real mess and a lot of lost money. And I'm sure Disney looked at that and said, "There's a better way of doing this," mm-hmm. You know. So it sucks. That game, at the most part, probably would get picked up and finished, because I think it was pretty close to being done. And it is a smaller title. It's mm-hmm. not as expensive.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, you as a small developer, or I mean, maybe not even a small developer, but you as an outside developer, are you going to want to go to LucasArts or Disney or whatever, however they end up branding this whole licensing thing? Are you going to want to go to them and pay money for a game that's almost done? And, like, I mean, would you start all over? Would you rip it down? Would you just finish off the last little bit that has to be done? Or, like, I mean, would you touch this with a 10-foot pole when it's already so far into development? I mean, I feel like it's probably just dead.
Well, that happens every day in the gaming industry. I mean, look at Duke Nukem Forever. Like, that thing had been developed for
really?
8 years.
That's a good example?
It is a good example. It had been developed for 8 years, finished and half finished for the longest time, and then Gearbox picks it up and finishes it. So there are developers out there who are passionate about it.
Oh, no, I mean, it's a good example of this scenario. Yeah. I just don't know if it's necessarily a good example of a good video game.
Oh, we weren't talking about it.
We want to repeat.
We're not talking about whether the game's going to be good or not. We're just talking about it coming out. If we're gonna talk about a game being good, I can't really think of an example, but I don't know. And guy Al in the chat room, I'm gonna call you Al. Al in the chat room says Republic Commando 2, and I agree. Give that to people who worked on Metroid Prime or Halo 4, and that would be fantastic. That was a great game. It was a Star Wars sort of shooter, first person shooter. It was really cool. But unfortunately, probably won't see many good Star Wars games for time to be. You know,
yeah,
it'll be a while.
So there was one last article here about how the LucasArts employees saw this coming. So I kind of wanted to touch on this, and because obviously GDC happened just before the announcement was actually made, so people were looking for jobs when they were at GDC. Mm-hmm. With all of the closings that have been happening over the last year and a half, it seems pretty much since we started the show, people have just been closing their doors. Like every other week we have a story about, you know, somebody shutting down. So how much do you think, because I remember when 38 Studios shut their doors, everyone was still saying, oh no, everything's fine, everything's fine, everything's fine. So how often do you think that people actually see things like this coming? Do you think that normally it's a blindsided thing? Do they see their titles not performing and think, okay, we're probably going to get shut down? Or mm-hmm. like, you know, how do you think that that kind of factors in, is the whole, how much do people see this coming?
I think in the case of 38 Studios, they were actively being lied to by, not lied to, it lies is a strong term, but more just withholding.
Misled?
Not even misled, just withholding information that would, you know, cause them to panic, you know? But in this case, you know, they saw it coming, like they saw the continued cancellation of projects, you know, departing high-level employees. There was a lot of people leaving LucasArts, freeze on hiring. And, you know, it's just, there's a lot of reasons in this article as to why they would have saw it coming. And you just got to look for the signs, right? And, you know, other things they say here is like employees weren't even allowed to talk about stuff they were doing, so they just went there to find jobs, right? Because there was no avoiding it, that it was happening.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it sucks for everyone who lost their jobs. Like, I mean, that it's a terrible, terrible situation to be in. But I mean, the one thing that I have noticed with all of these closings is that the larger studios have been so supportive of everyone who's lost their jobs. And they definitely have said things like, you know, here's our hiring page and we're always hiring or we're looking for people doing X, Y, and Z. And if you're in this area, then, you know, contact us. And there seems to be a definite feel in the industry of being supportive and saying, just because your studio closed doesn't mean we think you're bad at your job. So we would still like to take a look at you for positions within our studios. So it seems like it's a very, the internet kind of helps in that way, right? Well, it's a very open kind of community and very, very supportive of everyone who is involved and who has lost their jobs. And it's great to see the industry rallying around people who are in situations like this.
Yep. No, it's really cool. Twitter sort of just explodes whenever there's like a high profile closing or, you know, letting go of employees. So,
yeah. So we actually have a giveaway to do right before we end off the show. So this is for everybody in the chat room. Mm-hmm. We have a beta key. Ryan, do you want to talk about it since it came from you?
Yeah, they did a giveaway of Company of Heroes 2 beta keys, and I grabbed an extra one. I haven't tried it yet, and I don't know how limited it is, but I have a key. I guess it'd probably be best to find out if anyone actually wants it first, and if they don't want it, we'll post it on Twitter or something. So I have a Company of Heroes 2 beta key. So while you guys are talking about that, I'll also mention that next week we're going to be giving away a copy of XCOM for PC.
Again, to the chat room?
Depends. Yeah, probably the chat room. So when Andrew's over, he's responsible for free play. He's going to be joining us. We'll give away XCOM to people who come in live.
Worst job of pimping a guest appearance on the show ever. So next week we have joining us Andrew Allen, who is the creator of Free Play.
There you go.
You can visit him on Kickstarter right now because his project is currently funded, but there are some awesome stretch goals that are posted. It's a piano classical type arrangement of a whole bunch of video game music. So he had what was the previous one called that he did? Smooth Federation, that's it, which was his take on a whole bunch of sci-fi stuff. Both are done by Coverville, the indie record label from Brian Ibbett. My tongue is not working today. So he will be joining us at our regular time on Friday night next week. I am very excited. I know Ryan is very excited because he is definitely the video game music soundtrack guy. So
I already backed it. I'm looking forward to it. So
yeah.
And getting it signed at Nerdtacular.
Yes, he will also be at Nerdtacular, which Ryan and I will both be at Nerdtacular. The first time that we're ever actually going to get to meet in person. So this is really, really awesome. I'm super excited.
I had to go all the way to Utah to do it.
I know. We used to live like a 2-hour drive apart, and yet we're going all the way to Utah. Yeah. Anyways, not the point. Check us out next week, next Friday at 8:30 Eastern, where we will be interviewing Andrew Allen and talking random video games, because I actually don't know what we're talking about next week. So it'll be fun.
That was much better than what I did.
Yeah, totally, yeah. You need to learn how to pimp.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go to jail.
That's true. So visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com, or you can email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on Amove TV, along with other fabulous podcasts such as StarCast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, and This Week in Blizz. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Google+. So before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to my brother Greg for creating our awesome music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan of StarCrossed Online, who drew our Twitter avatars and created our logo. You can find him on Twitter at Joel Duggan or read his comic online at StarCrossedOnline.com. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week. I even Googled, what's the point of fishing in WoW? And there's like nothing. We require more minerals.